Welcome to the WBFO Press Pass. I'm Mark Scott, joined this week by Elizabeth Licata, editor of Buffalo Spree. We're going to take a break from the weighty issue of preservation in this edition to have some fun with this month's Buffalo Spree cover story, Cocktails.
Thanks, Mark.
And you're here, and you have in front of me some rye and the makings for a Manhattan. We'll get to that in a second.
Yes.
But tell us about the origin of the term cocktail.
Well, I don't think we have the definitive answer. Of course, you know, just like everyone else, I did like my rigorous research of this on Google, and you know, we know that there's a story about how it came from someone stirring a drink with a rooster's tail. But then there's a story from England where around the Restoration or so, some gentlemen were billed for drinks that they had in a tavern, and one of the drinks was called a docked tail or something like that. It was sort of like a horse's tail, and so that's where they think it may have come from. But the kind of drinks that we're talking about that mix different liquors and everything, it's pretty much widely accepted that they were popularized in America.
Mm-hmm. And where in Buffalo can you get a good cocktail?
Well, you know, I think that it depends on what cocktail you want. I think you can get a great cocktail almost anywhere. I think a lot of people should recognize that there's some wonderful bartenders in places that we ordinarily think of as restaurants, and I would certainly include, like, say, Oliver's or Mother's. But for a real sort of new wave kind of cocktail place, I recommend going to Vera Pizzeria on Lexington, and then also the lounge in Mike A's restaurant in the Hotel Lafayette. They have some very forward-thinking bartenders, mixologists, I guess we should call them, who are creating their own drinks, and they're using interesting ingredients, and they're making a lot of retro or vintage drinks. There's a new place on Elmwood called the Savoy as well, and I'm sure I'm leaving some out.
Well, you did profile John Carroll. Do I have that right?
Yes.
At Vera. What makes him such a good bartender?
Well, you know, I think John's really done his research. I mean, I don't think he went to bartending school or anything like that, but he's a young guy. Used to be a rock musician, a drummer, and he's been sort of swept up in this renaissance of what we call pre-prohibition cocktails or artisanal cocktails, cocktails that really take a lot of thought. They're made carefully. They're made with really pure, good ingredients. There's no mixes. There's all squeezed freshly squeezed juices. Sometimes house-made bitters are used. Various types of alcohols are used, and like mixing alcohols and base alcohols that are artisanal. Some of those are small batch, made from small producers, and it's a thoughtfulness, and I think that's what you get from John when you see him.
Well, let's hear from John himself from a video Buffalo Spree produced for its website on mixing the traditional Manhattan.
Everybody thinks of the contemporary Manhattan these days as a bourbon drink with sweet vermouth, maybe bitters, maybe no, definitely cherries. Because of Prohibition and then World War II and then long periods of time where American rye production got bumped out, that eventually led to what we think of as the modern Manhattan. At the time of its inception at the Manhattan Club in New York City, nobody knows which bartender really invented it, but at the time of the Manhattan's invention, it was a much different drink and much more of an aperitivo cocktail, which means before dinner. And I'd like to make one of those for you to kind of show a different spirit and a different attitude towards this drink. Originally, that cocktail started
with... Now, to find out the rest of his secret of making a good Manhattan, you'll have to watch the rest of the video, and you'll find a link from the Press Pass story at WBFO.org. But you have the makings right here, so...
As much as I could get them together, it's not exactly what John has, but it was interesting. His recipe for Manhattan was interesting to me because it contained one of my favorite liqueurs, Grand Marnier, which is not normally used in any recipe for Manhattans that I know of. And as you'll see on the video, John says this is an older recipe, possibly the original recipe. So as he has it, you take one part, as they call them, the measures and drinks of rye whiskey, and I have Templeton Small Batch Rye. Okay. I think this is as good or better than the rye that John uses. I hate that pouring sound that John uses in the video. So one part of that.
The pouring sound is good for
the
radio,
the pouring
though.
Sound, yeah, okay. And then, interestingly, half a part, and I'm measuring pretty loosely, but if you've ever been in a bar, they do too. Yeah. Half a part of Grand Marnier and half a part of the traditional Manhattan ingredient, which is red vermouth. And he uses a special sweet vermouth, rather, than I'm just using your normal Noilly Prat that we can all easily find. And then John says that you don't really need to shake this because all the ingredients are of the same consistency, so they don't really need to be emulsified. Well, that's what I would call it. That might be a cooking term. And then you stir it with a long-handled spoon. And I'm using a pint beer glass as a mixing glass, which is probably not the ideal. You can get special mixing glasses.
And we're going to talk about that in a second.
Yeah.
Now, how long do you stir it?
Just enough to chill the liqueur, and it's been sitting in my car all day, so I'm not that worried about it. Yeah. That's probably against the rules, too. And then I'm going to pour some for you. And you can drink it or not drink it. That's up to you.
I'm definitely going to have a sip. Now,
oh, good.
We're recording this on Wednesday afternoon, the second day of the WBFO fundraiser. So I only can have a sip because I have to go on the air, and I don't think it would be good to have too much.
Take your twist.
Be quite the fundraising experience, but here we go.
What do you think?
Mm. Oh.
I like it.
Oh, yes.
It's really smooth, isn't
yes.
it?
Yes.
I think that Grand Marnier makes a difference.
Yeah. Wow. I wish I'm taking everything.
I know. It's too bad we have to,
not to finish
keep
this.
Talking and yeah. can't just sit here and finish these drinks.
Well, I tended bar for a fine dining restaurant in Olean. I was working in radio. Needed to make ends meet, so I got a part-time job tending bar right before I came to WBFO. But after watching this video, I was just a pretender. I mean, John is a true professional who almost approaches bartending as a science.
Yes, he's precise and also as an art and also with respect for the ingredients. And I think that you see all those things. And it's a little bit of a performance. The drink that I just made is just requires stirring. But when they shake their drinks, they use a special equipment. And they shake those drinks for it. I think it also kind of takes some muscle. I've never seen bartenders shake drinks as long mm-hmm. as they shake the drinks in places like Vera or at the lounge at Mike A's.
And I didn't think ice mattered. I mean, ice is ice. But that's not true. When you're talking cocktails.
No, all ice is not created equal. What you want, those of you who have those old-fashioned ice cube makers that make the square cubes, you're in luck. But you can also buy now all over the place these nice silicone ice cube trays that make perfectly square cubes and sometimes really large cubes. And you can have fun with them. I have been freezing ice that has like maybe an orange slice or orange peels in the ice. You can freeze juices in ice, like a raspberry slushy or something. Make that into ice and then let that be in your drink. But I think the thing is that you want the old-fashioned square ice. Other ice, it has like thin edges and thick edges, like the sort of crescent-shaped ice. So it doesn't melt all at the same time. So you don't get really the consistency. Your drink will be either too diluted.
Yeah, yeah. Now, we talked earlier about the tools for someone who wants to make the perfect cocktail at home. And what would they be?
Well, recommend, not too many, really, the Boston Shaker, which is basically two big metal, I don't know what else, glasses, and they fit together, and then you shake them really, really hard for a long time, and then it all the liquid goes into the one glass there, and they're both the same size. Mm-hmm. That's what you use to shake them, and I think you'd have to be somewhat adept to do that. Because these are two separate parts. They don't fit together. They're not screwed together. You've got to keep them together.
Yeah.
And I could just see myself doing it and them just flying to opposite ends of the room.
Yeah.
You know, liquor splashing everywhere. But, you know, the way a good bartender does it is different.
And a muddler and a jigger?
Yes. They use the old-fashioned, two-sided metal jigger that looks sort of like an hourglass. I'm sure you know what I mean.
Yeah.
And then a very long-handled bar spoon is important, and some nice glasses. And other than that, one of those strainers.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
A strainer, and not too much else than that.
Now, many people, I'm sure, get a bottle of something as a gift, and they put it in a cupboard where it's forgotten. Does booze have a shelf life?
Well, if it's 100%, if it's 80 proof, 100 proof, it lasts a really long time. The alcohol is keeping it going. Where you get into trouble is with your fortified wines like vermouth. For many years, I've always assumed that vermouth was the worst tasting thing in the world because I think I've only tasted it from people who had it sitting in the refrigerator for a year. It really only lasts for about 6 weeks.
Okay.
So the good thing to do is you see here, Mark, I have a small bottle. And so get it in small bottles so you'll use it up.
Yeah. Yeah.
But those fortified wines and some of your Baileys, your liqueurs that aren't very high proof, you've got to keep an eye on them too.
All of the bartenders you talked with referenced the use of bitters in drinks,
yes,
saying it's seasoning for the cocktail, much like salt and pepper is for food. Now, I remember occasionally using bitters when I was a bartender, but I don't think I've used them since, and that's 30 years now. Explain their importance.
Well, you can overdo it with the bitters, but they can add different flavors. For example, there's lavender bitters, there's lemon bitters, there's orange bitters, there's peppermint bitters, there's chocolate bitters. So if you're making, say, a drink that has a chocolate liqueur in it, you could, whatever your drink is, you can match your bitters to your drink to sort of give a more intense flavor. And they take away some of the sweetness. So the drink is not cloying. It gives it just a little bit of an edge. I mean, well, a bitterness, just a slight bitterness that just adds dimension, makes the drink more interesting, maybe, and it doesn't make it seem too syrupy or sweet.
Once gin and vodka was just gin and vodka.
Yes.
But now we have cherry, cotton candy, chocolate, even bacon vodka. Or gin. I understand that if you're so inclined, you can infuse your own spirits at home.
You can. By the way, they also have smoked salmon vodka.
Oh, okay.
And I had to say, I saw it. Yes, you can infuse your own spirits, and some of them are really easy. You can, for example, making your own limoncello. Very not hard at all. You just need a strong proof vodka, any type, or you can use Everclear, which is legal in some states, not in others, but
yeah.
A vodka is fine, and just keep it in a jar with your lovely thick lemon or make orange cello, use lime. That is, and you'll see lots of recipes for that on the internet, and I think it's one of the easiest ones to make, but it's not raspberries. It only takes a few weeks to infuse vodka, whatever clear spirit, vodka's the best because you don't want a flavored spirit, with a lovely raspberry flavor, in just in a mason jar or something, and then just strain it out. A friend of mine adds sparkling wine to that, and it's a really nice summer drink. It's refreshing.
Mm-hmm.
We've got instructions for them in Spree, but it's something that you can, it's fun, and they also make great gifts.
What fueled the resurgence of the cocktail? Because you do see them everywhere at bars these days.
Well, my theory is that it goes along with our recent attention to ingredients in food. Food being, ingredients being freshly sourced, of high quality, paying attention to your ingredients and creating something beautiful with it. I think it kind of goes along with that. I think we've always been interested in cocktails, but I think we're just as we don't want to have chemicals in our food, and we don't want to have additives that we don't need in our food, then we want our liquor to have that as well. We don't want to have a mixer that's almost all high fructose corn syrup. It's, you know, just like we don't like to see that in our juices, you know, or having our kids drink that stuff. We don't want it in our drinks. So I think paying a little more attention to what we eat has led to paying a little more attention to what we drink.
What's your favorite cocktail?
Oh, I love the Negroni. It's an old style cocktail. It's been around for a while. And it used to be that I wouldn't be able to get one because bars would not have Campari, because it's gin, Campari, and sweet vermouth. Or it could be gin, Campari, and Aperol, you know, in place of the vermouth. But now everyone seems to have it, so I take that as a good sign. That's my favorite.
I've always been a single malt scotch guy, and that's what I get when I go out. But I need to change that. I need to, you know, try some of these more interesting cocktails.
Well, you know, there's some great cocktails made with scotch.
Yeah,
they have them. I know Vera has some.
Good.
So
you
should go there sometime.
All right. Well, here. Cheers.
Cheers, Mark.
Elizabeth Licata is editor of Buffalo Spree. I'm Mark Scott with the Press Pass on WBFO.